brought to you by Modelo. Oh!
What up, brothers? Welcome back to Throwing Hands. It's me, it's Toby. First episode in a couple weeks, but today we're going to be talking about the 145 division because some important fights have happened there in the past couple weeks. We didn't review Saturday's Mexico card because this is really the main story that's come out of it, in a sense that, Toby, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like Topuria has a chokehold in this 145 division for the next few years. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that. I think that both the guys from the previous main event would probably get handled by Topuria pretty easily, even in the areas where they should excel at. Or some people might even say they have an advantage over Topuria. But the way I see it is he's too well-rounded. Like, I think he can match anybody probably anywhere. So I think, yeah, he's going to hold his belt for a while.
Yeah, I'm pulling up Yair and Ortega right now. So in case you didn't hear, Brian Ortega defeated Yair Rodriguez by submission. And to be honest, none of them look good, in my opinion. Maybe it's just a stylistic matchup, but Yair knocked Ortega down twice in the first round, if I'm not mistaken. Once, but he stumbled. And he was hurt. It wasn't just a simple, you know, knockdown. Ortega was pretty hurt, and Yair couldn't get the job done. And then Brian Ortega 10-8'd Yair in the second round, and then just got the job done in the third round. I don't know why Yair hasn't worked on either submission defense or takedown defense that much in the past few years. I mean, Max Holloway controlled him on the ground pretty well in their fight. And Max Holloway isn't exactly the most renowned offensive grappler. And then Ortega, he gets hit so easily. He just moves forward. And it's great if you know how to move forward well, but he doesn't know how to move forward well. Toby, I don't know, what were your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts were is that it was a very predictable outcome in that Brian Ortega and Yair Rodriguez are two guys that excel in one particular area, and they have like glaring flaws in other areas of their game. So we've seen with Yair before where someone takes him down and they push him up against the cage and they start ground and pounding and he can't throw up submissions because he thrives when he's out in open space and he can, you know, throw up a bunch of submission attempts and just be active off his back. And this is exactly what Brian Ortega did not allow him to do. And he did a good job of that. So credit to Brian Ortega. But this has happened in the Frankie Edgar fight. Like you mentioned, Max Holloway was able to control him on the ground. And then Brian Ortega is a punching bag. I mean, this guy has not learned boxing fundamentals ever since, you know, Max Holloway even tried to teach him, but he still hasn't learned since then. And people thought like, oh, well, you know, with the TKZ fight, some people were saying maybe Ortega turned a corner, right? His striking has evolved. It really hasn't. I'm not sure what people expected. The first fight that they had in Long Island, Yair landed like 90% of his punch. Like out of the first, I don't know if it's actually that, but out of the first however many shots he threw, he landed a lot. And he was landing hard on Ortega. So it's not a surprise that Ortega got beat up and then was able to get a submission. I mean, honestly, it's a little surprising because I didn't think he was going to be able to actually pull off a submission. But, you know, credit to him. It's a tough guy.
Yeah. I mean, if we're looking at this, the first fight of Brian Ortega and Yair Rodriguez, I mean, 23 significant. I mean, they both landed the same amount of significant strikes, but
there's a big difference, yeah, though, with the.
It was clear. I know exactly.
Ortega's head was like getting. I just remember vividly moments where Ortega's head would get like turned around. I was like, man, you know, he's a tough guy. Like I said, he can eat shots, but. You know, you've talked about this all the time. When people resort to saying like, oh, this guy's so tough, it's kind of like, well, means he gets beat up a lot, you know?
Yeah. One thing, you made a point about his striking. His boxing, the throwing of his hands, shout out to the podcast, themselves,
yeah,
was better in the Korean Zombie fight, I'd say. But his head movement is non-existent.
Yeah, for sure.
in my opinion, if you're going up against a guy the likes of Ilya Topuria, I don't think that fares well for someone like Brian Ortega, who doesn't move his head. It's someone who pressures forward like Ilya Topuria. And
I think go ahead.
We could debate all day about how Topuria would handle himself on the ground against Ortega. I just can't see Ortega getting him there. And yes, Bryce Mitchell's a top three grappler in the division, probably. That's not saying much in this division, because this division is not very grapple health happy. I mean, Caceres might be the fourth best in the top 15, if that tells you anything about the grappling in the division. But I don't know. It's just, if Yair gets taken down in the ground by Topuria, it's going to be ugly. If Ortega can't get it to the ground, it's going to be ugly. But I think Topuria can work on the ground with Ortega. I don't know, man. This is interesting.
Yeah, I think a key difference between a fighter like Ilya Topuria and Yair Rodriguez is that when Yair had Ortega hurt in this fight, he lost a lot of his technique. He was kind of running in recklessly. And Topuria is a very, very calculated finisher. I mean, you watch any of his finishes over Damon Jackson, for example, or Jai Herbert. I mean, he is like very focused when it's time to get someone out of there. Bryce Mitchell. And yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, you know, Bryce Mitchell's a pretty good wrestler. I've denigrated Bryce Mitchell's wrestling ability. And after watching his past couple fights, well, with the exception of the last fight, obviously, but before that, his wrestling, you know, it's better than I had anticipated, to be completely honest. So it's really, you know, getting taken down like once or twice by Bryce Mitchell is not really a big deal. I don't think Ortega, his wrestling looked better in this fight, but Topuria is on a different level when it comes to takedown defense. And once it gets to the ground, then Yair Rodriguez is.
You make a good point about Ortega's wrestling. It's not great. His jiu-jitsu is phenomenal. I mean, that was a great arm triangle. He cinched that up beautifully. But his takedowns are mostly single leg, high crotches, and he kind of tries to pull the chair out from under you, in a sense, I guess. And then, like you said, you made the point about, if he's out in the middle of octagon, he probably has some of the, I think his grappling is underrated offensively. You make a good point there. If he's out in the open, but if he's up against the fence, he has. And what's Topuria gonna do? I'm a Topuria stan. I will ride for this guy all day, every day, through thick and thin. If there's no Topuria fans left, I'm dead. Let's just put it that way. But
yeah,
There's, in my opinion, there's not much in this division as for a challenge for Topuria. Holloway can do it, but he doesn't move his head either. That's why he has the most significant strikes absorbed, over any fighter ever. I'm pretty confident I'm right on that. But
yeah, that is true.
And I look at the rest of this division. Who gets the next title shot? Because I think Topuria came out and he said he doesn't, he's not going to fight until like September, October, November. And people complaining, oh, he's not going to fight much. He's never fought more than twice in a year, if I'm not mistaken. So that's just how he rolls. He's going to retire by 32, which, hey, if he wins out by 32, I'd do the same thing. So,
well, look, I mean, with the age that he's at, even if he's only fighting twice a year, he's going to have like 10 title defenses and if he retires by 32 and retains the belt, like assuming he, you know, with injuries and everything, realistically in that time frame, he could probably rack up like 6 or 7 title defenses. And that would still put him up there with one of the greatest resumes in the featherweight division's history. So, and he'll probably move up actually too. So he could even get 2-division champion status. I mean, that's a fight, him versus Islam. I mean, oh boy, you know, that is,
yeah,
that's incredible. You know, Volkan Islam, right? Like that's a super high level fight, incredible fight. This might even be a little better. I mean, this could even be a little past that, if I'm being honest.
I mean,
in terms of my excitement for it, I mean, two guys from the Caucasus Mountains. Oh man.
Oh, Russia versus Georgia, that's a sad rivalry right there if you open up a history book.
Ooh, well, yeah, but
yeah.
In the context of mixed martial arts.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is great. This is everything we ever wanted. I lost my train of thought, but you know, Holloway should get the next title shot, in my opinion. Volk shouldn't come back for a hot minute.
Not
a while. And Holloway should get the next title shot. But if he gets TKO'd against Gaethje, I say goodnight, man. If he goes down to featherweight, because that's terrifying if he's going to fight Topuria.
Well, if he loses to Gaethje, he certainly should not be fighting Topuria, even if it's like 4 or 5 months later. Like, I think, he should take a fight in between that or just take a little more time off. I mean, in the meantime, I wouldn't have an issue with Brian Ortega getting a title shot. I mean, that's kind of, you got to go through Brian Ortega. All the, like, Holloway did it, Volk did it. I mean, he's just kind of one of those guys that's been around. And it was an impressive win over Yair. I feel like he's the most deserving out of, like, Evloev and Josh Emmett. You know, they're coming off wins, but Evloev, a lot of decisions. Josh Emmett, he beat Bryce Mitchell. That's not really title shot worthy. So there's really only two guys that you could even make a case for, I think.
Yeah.
And it's Holloway and Ortega. And it really just depends on what happens at UFC 300.
Yeah, and if you look at I personally think Ortega should fight Evloev for a title eliminator. That's just my opinion. I mean, Ortega's been out for a minute. I don't think that he deserves a title shot right away. He's not John Jones.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, Holloway's, ever since COVID came into play, YouTube's going to find a way to put COVID information down at the bottom of this video.
Yeah, no, Holloway's definitely deserving. I mean,
yeah.
Beating
he's only lost
Korean
to Volk
Zombie,
in the,
beating Arnold Allen.
Pandemic.
Yeah. Exactly. Only lost to Volk, beat Yair, all these guys. He went through everybody else. So,
yeah. So, there's people that are saying Holloway isn't in his prime. I don't really see too much of a decline from him. People are like, oh, it's clear. Is it really? Am I missing something, Toby?
The only thing that worries me a little bit is he got hit pretty often by Korean Zombie, and Korean Zombie was looking slow, and he should not have been touching Max Holloway as much as he did in that fight. I mean, there are moments where, Max got cracked in that fight and he ate it well. But if that were Gaethje, I mean, that's a bad situation for Max Holloway, because we saw, people have watched the Dustin Poirier fight that he had at UFC 236. I mean, Poirier was tagging him. He was falling all over the octagon. I don't think he got knocked down. Maybe one time he got knocked down in that fight. Or no, he kind of like stumbled. I don't know if his hand or anything touched the ground. But Gaethje's got more power than Poirier and is a very accurate guy, very deadly finisher. So, just to see how often Holloway got hit against Korean Zombie, I don't think he's washed. I don't think he's out of his prime per se. He's still pretty young, and I think he's a tremendous fighter still. But it's just these last couple fights, he's just been getting hit pretty often, even though he's winning.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at Holloway, 3,197 significant strikes landed.
Yeah, way more than the next
Angela Hill.
Yeah,
Sean Strickland second. I had no idea.
Yeah,
makes sense. Jeez.
Yep, it does make sense. Look at Alistair too, with the almost 10% difference between him and the next highest significant strike accuracy. That's incredible. Yeah, that's actually 74%.
That's absurd.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he never threw something where I'd think, why is he throwing that?
Yeah. Alistair is definitely, without question, one of the most underrated fighters ever, because people look at his reel and they're like, oh, he's got knocked out so many times. Yes, but he's been knocked out a lot, but look at his resume. I mean, this guy, Strikeforce champion, Dream champion. I don't know if he was ever a Pride champion, but he was definitely
in the Grand Prix.
Yeah, definitely very good in Pride. K1 kickboxing. I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah, come on, guys.
Overeem certified Hall of Famer, in my opinion.
Oh, he has to be.
And there was a time too where like around the time when he got knocked out by Bigfoot Silva, where he was just kind of like not taking things too seriously and he was messing around in fights. It's kind of like Anderson Silva was at one point in his career. And he paid the price for that. But I mean, he made a title run after those losses. He ended up dropping Stipe in the fight. But anyway, I'm on a tangent about Alistair Overeem. So
Diopic. Yeah, man. To pour in the vice script.
Speaking of guys losing and then making one last run, I would love to see Edson Barboza going back to the title, baby. I mean, I think he would get smoked. I think he would really get knocked out badly by Topuria, but he is always a dangerous striker. Like, he can knock anybody out at any moment. Now, would that happen against Topuria? Very unlikely, but it would be fun.
Yeah, I think Topuria would just take care of business and bring it to the ground. I don't think he'd really mess with Barboza on the feet.
We're not doing this.
All right,
it
man.
Was an impressive last performance by Barboza, though.
Very true. He should have been out in that first round, if we're being honest.
Yeah, it was incredible that he survived that.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible.
And I would love to see Cater get back up there. You know, Cater's always been my boy, but I will say that last fight, he was not looking good, in my opinion, even though it didn't last that long. Like, I know he blew his knee out and everything. Before that, he was getting tagged by Arnold Allen. He was getting
pieced up.
He was getting pieced up. And yeah, so I think Cater, you know, I think he might be losing his step right now, which is unfortunate, but he is kind of in the later. It's like Rob Font. You know, they're both kind of like a little bit on the decline right now.
Fighting Aljamain. So
that's
I'm surprised.
It's a good matchup for him, I think.
I agree, but I'm surprised Aljamain didn't fight somebody in the top five because he was just the champ.
Yeah, that is interesting. Why they're doing that?
Yeah, I don't know. Aljamain would be a really interesting challenge for Topuria on the ground.
Yeah,
because he's so big. He's probably bigger than Topuria, if we're being honest. I don't know how he cuts down.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Man, what a time in the UFC. What a time, man. This is...
Yeah. I do think the best path for Topuria is definitely just to defend a couple times and move up, because realistically, there aren't many big fights with good contenders at featherweight right now. There's just way more matchups at lightweight. But even still at lightweight, I think... I don't want to say lightweight is an overrated division, but I will say that in the same... similar to featherweight, it's a little bit clogged at the top with guys who have just been there for a long time and maybe shouldn't really be up that high, you know?
That's what I was
talking about, like Michael Chandler. I mean, Poirier a little bit. I love Poirier, but, you know, these guys have been there for a long time. Oliveira is still legit future champion.
I mean, if we think about it, in a couple of years, Charlie Olives might not be there. Gaethje might not be there. Poirier might not be there. Chandler probably won't be there. Dariush might not be there.
Hooker, I mean, we're talking... That's like two, 3 years, maybe. All those guys, there's a possibility that they're all gone.
RDA, he's still up there. Bobby Green won't be there. Drew Dober won't be there. So many of these guys won't be here in a couple of years.
Yeah, and of course, there's going to be good prospects coming through, but if you look at bantamweight right now, that's where it's at. That's the primo... That's number one stacked
all the top five except for Aljamain's 30 or younger. So,
and we got Figueiredo now coming down there. I mean, Song Yadong is a killer, you know, Jonathan Martinez, Umar. Umar could be in a title fight right now, to be honest.
Dominic Cruz, up and comer, you know,
yeah,
David. Oh, dude, I think Figgy needs to go on a crazy run.
I hope he does. He's a very fun guy to watch. So,
dude, he looked great against Rob Font, I thought. Yeah. I thought he looked fantastic.
Yeah. Maybe they could do him versus Cejudo, a little former student versus master moment, you know?
Oh, I fear for Garbrandt.
It's kind of a weird fight. You know, it's like, I mean, Figueiredo just beat Rob Font, who is still a legit contender. And he looked very good. And Cody Garbrandt just beat Brian Kelleher, who is, I don't know if he's even has a 500 record in the UFC. And it's like, yeah, he looked good. He got a knockout and everything. But Figgy? I don't know, guys. I don't know what we're doing here with Cody. I think
weren't they lined up to fight
a little bit?
weren't they lined up to fight for the 125 title at some point?
Yeah. Cody was definitely talking about moving down. And I think they might have even, gotten pretty far.
I think they made the fight, but Garbrandt got COVID. That's what it was. Yes. Mm-hmm. He got COVID bad.
Boy, that would have been bad. That would have been a bad knockout.
Especially at 125.
I think Figgy would have just walked through him, probably.
Oh, dude, no question about it. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Man. Look, I hate to be that dude. I hate how everyone wants to be double champ, double champ, double champ. But if Sean O'Malley goes out there and sparks Cheeto, we have to make Topuria versus O'Malley in the summer. I don't care what anybody says.
Wait, hold on. I will say, I am all for O'Malley versus Topuria. Great matchup. I think people are definitely underrating Sean O'Malley in that matchup. He has very good takedown defense. He's got good BJJ in his own right. I think he would do well with his length, with his height, with his reach. With all that being said, he needs to fight. Once he beats Cheeto, he's got to fight Corey Sandhagen.
I agree.
Corey Sandhagen has put in the time. He has been grinding. And he deserves it. He really does deserve it.
They've already promised Merab the next title shot.
Yeah, but you know what? Merab can wait a little bit more. He's like, he didn't want to fight Aljo. I mean, all this. Merab waited his turn. He can wait a little longer.
I'm not arguing with you there.
If you just like, generally speaking, the fans out there, what would everyone want? Would they rather see Merab in a title fight, or would they rather see Sandhagen and O'Malley?
Dude, that's
the absolute striker's dream matchup. Now, I mean, Sandhagen could come out there like Merab. Who knows with these last couple fights? Sandhagen might be Dagestani handcuffing O'Malley, but
no,
I don't know. I think they'd strike.
Here's the thing. Cheeto could spark O'Malley. That's the thing.
That's possible.
I'm expecting the best Cheeto. And when Cheeto's the best, there's not many people that can beat him. Let's be real here.
Yeah, Cheeto's good, but I don't know. I'm a bit of a Cheeto hater.
I like Cheeto personally. I mean, I think that Rob Font performance is one of the most interesting things ever.
Yeah. No, the thing about Cheeto to me is that if you just go back through his entire career, he's pretty much losing every single fight that he's ever been. And he's very much like Brian Ortega. It's the exact same way. These guys made it into the title picture by getting beat up for most of the fight. You're talking about a guy in Cheeto Vera who was losing to Frankie Edgar, completely washed, absolutely washed Frankie Edgar. And Cheeto Vera was getting outstruck by this guy and then landed a great front kick. Don't get me wrong. Fantastic knockout. I respect the knockout. But when you're losing to, Dominic Cruz and Frankie Edgar, and if you even go back further in his career, like really obscure guys.
Didn't he lose the first round to Davy Grant?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he gave that fight against Song Yadong, gave that fight away. Could have easily won that one. And I just haven't seen, outside of the first O'Malley fight, which was really just result of Sean O'Malley getting hurt, I haven't seen much aggressiveness from Cheeto, except for in like very specific moments, which, yes, that works out pretty often for him, but you can't just expect that type of strategy or lack thereof to work out in the long run. And I will say his last performance, I thought he looked better volume wise and I thought he was just doing a better job in general, but I've just been disappointed a lot with some of his performances.
Yeah. And this was not a split decision. No means.
Yeah.
Terrible. I don't remember the judge's name, but he judged Bellator the day before in Connecticut and flew out to Houston that day.
Yeah.
Or San Antonio. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Cheeto, I mean, okay, that Cruz knockout was pretty brutal. He hasn't fought since. I hope he's okay.
Yep.
That was...
No, he's got great timing, pretty accurate guy, but
like if he lands, you're going to the ground.
Yeah.
He's
super tough. I mean, he's probably got one of the best faces for taking punches in the entire UFC. Like I've never seen him even get scratched by a punch, which is pretty miraculous.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's ever been cut in he's been in the UFC a long time. I literally don't think he's ever like bled in a fight.
I don't think he has. I mean, you wouldn't think someone with a 159 to 271 ratio of significant strikes lost would win a fight like that.
That was a bad one. That's one of the worst beatdowns you'll ever see, which is crazy because Rob Font landed over 120 more strikes or something around that than Cheeto. But I mean, he got just destroyed. It was hard to watch at the end.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on. We'll talk about that more next week because I'm excited for that. That'll be fun. Roy Val looked great, I thought. First two rounds went to Moreno, but I thought the last three pretty clearly went to Roy Val. I don't get how this was split personally. But, man, if Roy Val had some punching power, Moreno would have been out of there. He was getting stuck in the last three rounds. And Moreno, he looked just slow. I don't know what it was. He had this weird overhand right. I don't know what it was. Excuse me. And he had that leg kick that he was going hard with, and it was working pretty well. I don't know, man. And if we look at the rankings at flyweight, I mean, Pantoja's beaten everyone in the top 10, essentially. I don't know, man. What do you think? These guys won't get a title shot next. Who does Pantoja fight next? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I do think this was a pretty subpar performance from Moreno. Just based on his past performances, he's looked so impressive in some fights, like the Kai Kara France fight, for example. He looked incredible at making great reads. He was landing that beautiful body kick that ended up finishing the fight. And that was the fight that he had James Krause in his corner, who's a good coach. I mean, you know, can't deny him that. So I'm not sure what happened in this fight where he decided that he was just going to wing big, like slicing overhands. He kind of just... Kamaru Usman is a guy who does this a lot of times. He'll like put his head straight down and just swing hooks. And sometimes that can work if you get into a wild exchange with an opponent. But Brandon Royval is a little too slick and quick for that type of strategy to work. So I'm not sure why Moreno was trying to dig in so much and plant and swing when you've got a guy like Royval as a flyweight who's going to be moving around in and out lateral movement. Yeah, Moreno looked a little bit slow. He was a step behind. And Royval was leaving a lot of openings, which is very characteristic of Royval. I kind of understand maybe Moreno was like, all right, I'm going to let him land these punches on my guard. And as he's throwing, his hands are going to be down and I'm going to land a big counter. But Royval, you know, was able to eat a lot of shots from Moreno and he was able to just evade most of them. So at some point throughout a 5-round fight, once you realize that your initial game plan isn't working, you're not touching him up the way you thought you were, you've got to switch your strategy. And Moreno just never really switched things up. To, you know, he didn't start like going to the body aggressively. He didn't really follow up on that leg kick that he was landing earlier in the fight, like you mentioned. So there was other things that he could have done, like just throwing the jab more consistently. I mean, what happened to his jab in this fight? No double jabs, nothing. And yeah, I thought it was a little bit disappointing, but Roy Val looked pretty good, I would say. And, you know, he just lost to the champ. So yeah, he's going to have to work his way back, but he looked pretty good.
Yeah. We'll see. What was I going to say? All right. I got to stop saying I don't know why I say that. But Rozenstruik Gazeev, you know, I don't know what we should do Monday. But I am more than interested in making a video about the top five worst name value main events since the pandemic, since 2020. I am more than down to do that.
Yeah,
and
we've
this
got
might
some good
just
options.
Be number one.
It's up there. I can't remember if Jessica I and Cynthia Calvillo happened before or after the pandemic, but I think it was a little bit before.
No, that was June of 2020.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's definitely a good candidate. I will put that one up there immediately. But yeah, I mean, I can't say I'm overly excited for Rozenstruik versus Gaziev. But at the end of the day, I'm still going to eat the slop that the UFC feeds me. So, you know, I'll obediently, you know, eat it up. But
yes, Uncle Dana.
Yeah.
We will watch.
I'm sorry. You know, I'll watch these random road to UFC guys and contender series guys. I don't care. I mean, I'm a degenerate over here, but it's not too bad. You know, it's okay. It could be better, definitely. But, you know, people talk about it all the time. I hear a lot more commentators talking about the overscheduling and just like lackluster events. And, you know, the UFC is not going to change. Like, even if people put pressure on them publicly, it's not going to do anything. They have a huge contract with ESPN, and ESPN's owned by Disney, and Disney is one of the large conglomerates in the whole world. So it's kind of just one of those things where it is what it is.
You're very right. You are very right.
It would be nice to go back to the days of, which I didn't even grow up with, but you know, before all this, like when they were on Spike TV and you know, those old channels. I mean, that would be pretty nice, but
yeah, I mean,
the glory days, you could say,
to some. And oh, I forgot about Ishuku versus Kutalaba as the main event. Oh, that's because Derek Lewis. Sick.
Mm-hmm.
That's but right.
Wasn't he supposed? Who was Derek Lewis supposed to fight? That was still a pretty bad main event. Yeah, that's okay. That's a little better.
Marina Rodriguez versus Amanda Lemos. I forgot about that.
Yeah, not great. Oh man, what was Michelle Waterson versus
Angela Hill?
Angela Hill. I was like, oh, come
Dern
on,
versus
man.
Hill.
Jeez, Louise. I mean, the UFC, for some reason, last year in particular, just went on a streak of like, we're just going to put a ton of women flyweights and strawweights into main events for no reason.
That was bad.
For no reason. Like, what were they thinking?
Yeah, 2022 was a rough year for main events.
Yeah.
Grasso versus Araujo. I'll get that name. Yeah. There's been some bad ones.
Yeah.
Ladd versus Dumont might be the worst one. I don't.
Oh, man. What? That doesn't even sound real.
Yeah, I remember. Aspen. I forget what. It was supposed to be Ketlin Vieira versus Misha Tate.
Oh,
but Tate
Lord.
Got COVID. And then Holly Holm and Dumont got elevated to the main event. Then Holm got hurt. Then Aspen Ladd replaced Holly Holm, but I remember Aspen Ladd either missed weight or had an injury the week before that prevented her from fighting. So that she came in and filled in.
Wasn't it a 3-round main event too?
Let me see.
I don't think they even went the full 5.
Oh, so I'm reading this real quick. She was scheduled to fight Sarah McMahon, and then she got COVID. Then it got moved to a month later, on September 17th. She weighed at 138, missed the limit. The bout was scrapped. Then she filled in for Holly Holm. That's how they got Ladd versus Dumont.
Oh, it was a 5-round fight, by the way. But yeah, that is pretty crazy.
Makhachev versus Thiago Moises. Man, I forgot about that. Jeez.
Yeah. That's not a bad one. I mean,
but yeah,
at the time it was kind of a lower level matchup, but it's a fun one, I would say. You know, Moises always brings it.
Yeah, that's true. He always does bring. He's fun. But yeah, Rozenstruik and Gaziev might be the second worst one, name wise, or third.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Ivers Calvillo card wasn't bad. I remember the card itself wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Maybe I was just fiending for sports because of COVID. But come on, YouTube, put that information down there for the people. But oh gosh, I mean, come on. This is there's so many better fights on this card too. Vitor and Petrino and Tyson Pedro are the co-main.
Yep.
Why is it Makhachev and Perez? Why isn't
that's a fun matchup?
Schnell and Ursek, great fight. Oh my gosh, this is actually kind of. Why isn't Pickett and Anders on the main card?
I do like that they've been putting flyweights higher up on the main card, at least.
As they should be.
Yeah, the last card had a bunch of flyweights. I mean, Alex Perez and Muhammad Makhachev, if this were the UFC a few years ago, that would have been like the opening prelim, even though it's a highly ranked matchup at flyweight. But now I think they finally understand that, you know, flyweights, maybe the knockout percentage has just gotten better among flyweights. And I think it has over the past several years, but they've always been very skilled. And I think the UFC just kind of disrespected flyweights for a long time for whatever reason.
Yeah. We have Ariel Helwani versus fighting Javed Basharat.
Yeah. Dude, this guy who's fighting Umar Beksat Al-Makan.
Dude's kind of a savage.
Yeah, he looks pretty dangerous, man. I mean, this guy
on the feet, absolutely.
Pretty good.
On the feet, he's actually pretty terrifying.
Yeah. This should be a fun one. I mean, this guy's no slouch for Umar.
I don't
Umar.
Think this guy's going to be a kid. If Umar, we haven't. Let me look up his record. Beksat Al-Makan.
Yeah, I just the UFC lists him as 17-0, I think. But on Sherdog, they have him as 14-1 with one submission loss.
On Topology, he's 17-1.
Okay.
Huh. He fought in Bushido? What? Crazy. Yeah, I mean, the dude, I mean, 13 wins by knockout, 2 by submission, 2 by decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy's a savage. I mean, this is not going to be a walk in the park for Umar.
I'd say he's pretty legit, yeah.
I think that's probably why they threw him in there against Umar. Like, this guy can definitely make some headway. This would be interesting, man. I'm actually kind of intrigued for that fight.
Mm-hmm. Dude, what'd you think about Bellator, PFL?
Oh, I knew there was one more thing we have. PFL's pathetic. I mean,
yeah.
Who's it? Henan Ferreira?
All their guys got destroyed by simple steroid testing, so. The toughest matchup for any PFL fighter is a steroid test. Yeah, the only PFL guy that won on the main card was Henan Ferreira, and he beat like old man, destroyed knees, bad chin, Ryan Bader. You know, no disrespect. I mean, Ryan Bader, he had a good run at one point, but man, he is not. First of all, he's not really a heavyweight, and he's definitely shouldn't be fighting a guy who's 6'8", who has incredible knockout power. I mean, I don't know what people thought was going to happen in that fight, but and all the rest of the other ones were kind of predictable too. I mean, AJ McKee, way more talented than Stevie Ray. Like, what
Stevie
are we doing?
Ray. Here,
Stevie Ray versus AJ McKee, those are two completely different worlds of skill.
Yeah, I mean, Eblen kind of.
Yeah, Eblen, you know.
I loved how they put him on the throne after. I'm like, dude, you lost to Impa Kasanganai.
Yeah, that honestly, I think Impa probably won that.
Do you guys want to know how bad PFL is? Let me tell you, Impa Kasanganai fought at welterweight in the UFC, right?
Mm-hmm.
He won the light heavyweight championship in PFL.
Yeah.
If that tells you anything at all about Impa Kasanganai. Well, not about how bad PFL is. Mm-hmm. Kasanganai is a skilled fighter to an extent. Mm-hmm.
I think he's pretty good. I think he got cut from the UFC a little early. He got cut because he got knocked out by Joaquin Buttley. And yeah, that was probably the greatest knockout we've ever seen.
He lost to Carlston Harris.
Well, yes, but he mainly, I think he got cut by, you know, by way of that knockout. I think like he lost a couple of fights, but I think he had more talent than, you know, I think he was written off a little too early.
Yeah, but he wasn't a big middleweight by any means. So,
yeah.
That tells you anything about PFL. But I don't know, what was Eblen doing? He got dropped. I mean, he didn't look.
Yeah, and then Thiago Santos and Yoel Romero, I didn't even watch that fight, so I'm not really sure what happened in it. But
I didn't watch it either. I wasn't too
I can't say at this point in my career, or at this point in their career, I'm really too interested in Yoel Romero or Thiago Santos. I mean, I love both those guys, but they're way past their prime. They both just taken a lot of damage. Yeah. And I don't know.
Okay. Aaron Pico's a savage, man. That dude is.
Oh. Yeah. Love Aaron Pico for sure.
I don't get how UFC needs to pick that dude up.
Yep.
He is really good.
Very fun guy to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, whew. Yeah. Nemkov beat Bruno Capoloza.
Mm-hmm. Not a surprise there.
McKee beat Clay Collard. I mean, Clay Collard's really. Clay Collard's really. Ray. You're thinking of Jason Jackson beating Ray Cooper.
Yeah.
That was just.
Yeah. Mean. I got Stevie Ray mixed up with Clay Collard.
That's so mean. Why did they put Jason Jackson up against Ray Cooper?
Yeah. I don't think it was supposed to be Ray Cooper, though. It was supposed to be whoever the...
Yeah.
A different guy that he was supposed to face, but...
Unless Kelsey DeSantis has a chin of something else that's not on this planet, Clarissa Shields did not look good.
Yeah. I didn't watch that fight either.
I mean, I saw the highlights. She landed a lot of shots in that fight, but they just didn't put her down. I was surprised. But
yeah, I don't know.
I mean, well, if you look at Clarissa Shields' professional boxing record, she only has 2 knockouts and 12 decisions.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
I thought she had way more fights than that.
Hey, she's a dog. She's a dog. What's his face? Ngannou's going to fight Ferreira. We'll see what happens there.
You think he really will?
I think he will. I mean, $2 million per fight.
Yeah, but
that's an easy $2 million, probably.
But how much does he make per fight in boxing? What do you like 10 minimum, probably going forward?
I don't know, but I think Jones do terrible things to both of them.
I don't know, man. Francis, I do think at this point in their career, I think Francis could actually present some problems to John. I think he
a right hand.
No, dude, come on. That the last few performances that we saw from Francis were very impressive. Stipe. That was a very good performance by Francis. The defensive wrestling that he showed in that fight, the scrambling for a guy of his size and his stature to move the way he did against Stipe, who's not a bad wrestler. I mean, Stipe is a very solid wrestler.
Yeah.
And Francis like shucked him off easily. And we cannot discredit the fact that Francis is just otherworldly powerful. Like he probably is the most powerful guy we've ever seen in MMA. And John is very elusive and, but there is always a chance. Look, John Jones at, 35 plus years old, whenever they step in there together, he's going to be like 35, 36, most likely, if it does happen. You never know, man. I mean, I would still favor John. Like, it would still be kind of a probably 60-40 situation, maybe even, closer to 70-30 in favor of John. But typically when John fights, I'm like 95% sure that he wins.
Here's my thing, though. I'm not, if this guy beats this guy, this happens. I'm not too big on that. However, Ngannou had over 10 minutes of control time in that fight against Gon, I'm pretty sure, and got nowhere close to a submission. John Jones got that done in a minute once he got onto the ground. What's Ngannou going to do on the ground with John Jones? Nothing. And that's John Jones, true. John Jones is going to keep that jab out there, maybe poke him in the eyes a little bit, and get to work. I don't see it going any other way. I truly don't. And if Gon didn't go for that stupid heel hook, he'd probably be the champ.
Yeah. I do think Ngannou in that fight, I mean, he was like very injured. He destroyed his ACL in that fight. And so I think he was more kind of just laying there, hanging on a little bit, if anything. I don't think he was necessarily going for a finish against Gon.
That's true.
I see your point, though.
I forgot about that. But, I mean, what would John Jones do to Hendon Ferreira? Let's be real here.
Yeah. Well, if Ngannou actually does fight Ferreira, I think Ngannou's going to knock him out easily.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jones at the he was at the event. Mm-hmm. I think he said, he wants to fight Stipe, then Aspinall, then Ngannou.
I mean, the UFC is probably just like, this guy, John Jones. No. Can you believe him? Disgusting behavior by John. As soon as John retires, the UFC is gonna just completely abandon him. I don't know if you've seen like all those elite texts, but so many of them are just about John Jones, where they're like the top level UFC guys are just like, we hate John Jones. He's such a bad person. He's so horrible to negotiate with and all this stuff. So, you know, there was that time when before Dana started ragging on Francis and saying that he was scared and he wanted too much money, he was saying the exact same thing about John Jones. He was saying, oh, John wants this unreasonable sum of money. And he's scared. He doesn't want to fight Ngannou because Ngannou is the most powerful guy out there. So the UFC is not a big fan of John Jones. And I think that whenever he's, I don't know. I just don't think they're going to allow him to do something like that. They locked him in for like an 8-fight contract when he came back or something. So
yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
I would be surprised if they were open to doing that. Because, you know, when this merger got announced, or not merger, when the PFL bought Bellator, Dana was like, oh, you know, one crappy company that nobody watches and they don't sell any tickets buys another one. And it's like, yeah, I don't think he's going to be cross-promoting anytime soon. I would love to see the fight, though. I mean, I would love John Jones to just be like, break his contract. Like, I'm out of here. I'm going to go fight, you know, do whatever I want. I would love to see that. Personally.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, if John Jones beats Aspinall and Stipe, he should just hang it up.
Yeah, most likely. And by the time he does that, too, Ngannou's going to be like 40 or 41.
Yeah, it wouldn't add anything.
Yeah.
I mean, if John Jones beats Aspinall, dude, like.
Yeah, to be fair, I was going to say Stipe to me doesn't really add much anyway. But if he beats Aspinall, then that is a legitimately, like, incredibly impressive win by John. Yeah, and it's definitely possible. I mean, I think John is still the most talented guy out there. So.
I really think Jones could do it because Aspinall just sticks his chin out there.
Yeah. John could clip him, man.
Pavlovich cracked him in the first 30 seconds. I thought it was over.
Curtis Blaydes was cracking Tom Aspinall in the first like 20 seconds. I mean, they were hitting each other, but.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they were swinging
caught him a couple times.
I knew in the first 20 seconds of that fight that was going to be a barn burn, but then he got hurt.
Same with Tybora. Tybora even cracked Aspinall a couple, like, really hard shots he hit him with.
See, yeah, I mean, John Jones just might, front kick, over. That's how I kind of see it going. Because Aspinall doesn't really throw kicks. I want to see that. All right, this is getting lengthy. So I'm going to wrap. Hold on. Let's see if there's anything big in the news.
I will give credit to John, though, for mentioning Aspinall, saying that he wants to fight Stipe, then Aspinall, because there was the questions of, will he just retire immediately after the Stipe fight? And I really think him fighting Aspinall, like, if he really wants to secure his legacy, which is ostensibly what he's trying to do, he should definitely fight Aspinall. That does way more for his legacy in the minds of pretty much everybody than a Stipe fight would.
Yeah. Joshua versus Ngannou, that's coming up. Pitbull versus Kennedy for the title fight. Okay, that's interesting. Rainier de Ridder said he underestimated Anatoly Malkin.
Man, I've watched that guy fight a couple of times, Anatoly Malkin. I don't know what it is about him, but yeah, he's like, whenever I watch him fight, I'm like, he doesn't seem to be the most skilled guy. He doesn't seem to be the most like quick or elusive or accurate, but he just walks through people and it really is impressive. Like whatever he does, he's kind of like a DDP almost, where I'm like, I see a lot of holes in this guy's game and I see how flawed he is in there, but I mean, no one's been able to stop him really yet. So, you know, if it works, I guess.
He's fighting de Ridder again at middleweight.
I did not know that.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. There you go.
I had 166 cutter.
Wow.
Is it going to be on Amazon? I'll probably watch that.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it too. It's probably going to be pretty early, though, I would imagine. It's going to be like, what, 8 a.m. or something?
I mean, if it's in Qatar, that's a whole other time zone. Hold on. This is important. Because I'm going to watch.
Yeah.
11 hours from now, so it starts at 7.
Nice. Yeah, 7:30 Eastern time. Yeah.
That's not bad at all.
No, I mean, I'll be up, so.
This card's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll probably put it on.
I will watch that.
I do like one I'm actually kind of a fan of the way one just throws on like Muay Thai fights and kickboxing matches, and they kind of just mix everything together. But I actually think they do it pretty well.
Yeah,
like
they don't matter. They don't do their finest as well. That's for sure.
Yeah, I will say the company's definitely mismanaged pretty significantly. But yeah, I mean, I like the thing about One is that I actually really like their product. Like, I like a lot of their platforms that they have. I like their presentation. I like a lot of their production of what they do. But it just like the backroom finances, like you said, not handled very well, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, I think Ryan Garcia is in way over his head fighting Devin Haney.
Yeah, I think Ryan Garcia is I think he's extremely talented, but I do think that's a very tough matchup for him. I mean, yeah, Haney's a world-class
guy,
probably quite a bit bigger than Ryan Garcia in terms of like body mass, at least. So yeah, that's a tough one. But respect to him. He's taken a couple of really tough fights, and I respect it.
Yeah, I mean, Haney's a dog. I mean, Lomachenko, Kambosos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dude, Ryan Garcia's in over his head. I don't know. Outside of his jab, what does Garcia have that's his hook? His rear hook?
Yeah.
So that's going to be tough for him, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a really hard fight.
Yep.
We'll see what happens. I'm interested to see April 20th. Oh, 420 in Las Vegas. How interesting.
Nice.
But yeah, that's all I got, man. Do you have anything else to add?
No, all good.
All right, cool. All right. So we will see you guys sometime next week. We'll figure out something Monday probably, but peace out, guys.
Peace.